Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview and promote people who are making a positive difference in the world. My name is Tom Tutal Cunningham. I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor, helping people to live positively with and through the many and varied challenges of life. I'm also Canada's most well-known car salesman, working out of Oakville Honda in the Toronto area. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since the age of 5. That's 45 years now. And in that time, I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced, which makes me sound like a spider, and I've been hospitalized about 40 times. I also stand about 5'1". That's due to heavy daily doses of the steroid prednisone that I had to take for my arthritis. And despite those physical challenges, anyone who knows me knows I always answer amazing when asked how I'm doing. You can find out more about me at my website, yourhondaguy.ca, yourhondaguy.ca. My guest today is George Myatt. He's from the Seventh Step of Society of Canada, which evolved from the Seventh Step Foundation in the U.S., which was founded by Bill Sands. I read the book, My Shadow Ran Fast. It's a Napoleon Hill Foundation published book that they bought the rights for, and Bill Sands had the most incredible, amazing life I have ever heard of, except for one friend of mine, Tim Chin. And he was given a copy of Think and Grow Rich in prison by the warden. And this book helped change his life. He was an ex-offender in Kansas State Penitentiary in 1963. Seventh Step Society in Canada started in 1967 in Haney Correctional Institution in British Columbia, started by Tom Gordon and Jack Lynch. It became incorporated in Canada as a charitable organization in 1984. The founding members were Pat Graham, B. Graham, and George, who we have on the line today. They're currently active in British Columbia, Alberta, Ontario, Nova Scotia, PEI, and Newfoundland. They have a national volunteer board, and it's comprised of non- and ex-offenders, and receive a small grant from Public Safety Canada and donations from members to help support their national activities. The Seven Steps to Freedom comprise the underlying philosophy and is similar to the 12 Steps to Sobriety of AA, but is not focused on substance abuse, but rather on living free in society. Welcome to the show today, George.
Thanks, Tom.
This is an incredible organization that you have. As I mentioned before the show, I read Bill Sands' book, and it just has been a goal even before that to help people in prison to, when they get out of there, to make something of their lives. And Bill Sands did that. He had an incredible life. And so I love to have you on the show. And also, George, so you know, my wife has worked for about 15 plus years as a paralegal for a criminal defense lawyer. And so a lot of people she knows are in the situation of who you guys work with. And she calls them frequent flyers a lot of times. When you're in the criminal law field for 15 plus years, you get frequent flyers, people who come to you every year or two with a different criminal challenge. And so you're trying to help avoid that and making productive citizens out of these people. So tell me the origins of the Seventh Step, because that's an interesting name that I had not heard of, and how you came to be involved.
Okay, well, as you mentioned, Bill Sands was our founder, was an ex-offender. I should also mention that his mentor was, in fact, a fellow by the name of Clinton Duffy, who was the warden of San Quentin Prison, where Bill was doing time earlier in his life. And the real story was, and this is talked about in the book My Shadow Ran Fast, was that Bill was considered an incorrigible. He actually came from a fairly good family. His father was a Superior Court judge. Bill got into trouble early and essentially dropped out of mainstream society and in a sense was determined that he was going to be a criminal or convict for the rest of his life. While he was in San Quentin, Clinton Duffy, who was an amazing man, was walking through the prison, met Bill, saw something in him that he thought had potential, and he said to him, you know, Bill, with all your ability, why don't you do something better for yourself? And San's response was, excuse me, why should I? He said, who cares? And Duffy said, I care. And that was kind of the start, I guess, the spark for Sands. And of course, he went forward after that to become a very successful motivational speaker in the United States and was involved in working with groups, Boy Scouts of America and others, and essentially as a motivational speaker. And at some point decided that he wanted to give something back. And his wife, who was a very positive influence in his life, worked with him and a chaplain at Kansas State Penn by the name of James Post, and they talked about how they could start a group. But first of all, they looked at what they could use for the philosophy, and this comes back to your point about where do the seven steps come from. So they looked at the word freedom. Freedom has seven letters in it, and if you were to see the steps, I won't necessarily read them all right now, but they're certainly available on our website. But I'll read the first step, which is facing the truth about ourselves and the world around us. We decided we needed to change. So that starts with the letter F. The second step, maybe if we've got time, I will go through this, realizing that there is a power from which we can gain strength, we decided to use that power. Third step, evaluating ourselves by taking an honest self-appraisal. We examine both our strengths and our weaknesses. Fourth step is endeavoring to help ourselves overcome our weaknesses. We enlist the aid of that power to help us concentrate on our strengths. Fifth step, deciding that our freedom is worth more than our resentments. We're using that power to help free us from those resentments. Sixth step is observing that daily progress is necessary. We set an attainable goal towards which we can work each day. And the seventh step, and this is sort of where the seven-step society or foundation comes from, is maintaining our own freedom, we pledge ourselves to help others as we have been helped. So if you look at the first letter of the first word of each step, it spells out the word freedom. Now, Sands in his book said that this was accidental. I don't quite think that was accidental. I think that was a little stretch. But in a sense, though, it really fits. And that's what the basis of the organization is facing the truth about ourselves. And that's the first step is really probably the most important step, especially for people who have been in and out of prison, because many people, whether they've been in prison or not, I mean, as you know, people can be in prison in their minds in society and never have gone to jail, and they delude themselves with a whole lot of mistruths or misconceptions and might even be relatively successful in the mainstream of life in a sense, but
right.
may never of happiness internally, and so that's really part of it, and so, you know, the foundation started in the States, spread significantly across the United States, eventually into Canada in 1967 in British Columbia, and then it started to spread across the country, but really the biggest catalyst came from Alberta and from a fellow by the name of Pat Graham. Pat was a career criminal who eventually decided that, and I think he had a bit of an awakening, somewhat like Sands, and one of his mentors was a fellow by the name of Pierre Jutra, and Pierre was a warden in the Correctional Service of Canada penitentiary system, and he had met Pat originally when Pat was doing time in Prince Albert Pen. This was back in the late 40s, and eventually saw him again. Pat was, I guess, what you might consider a relatively successful criminal in some sense, although he did some time away, but he was somewhat sophisticated and a very intelligent man, is an intelligent man, he's still alive. And Jutra had a very positive effect on Pat, and I think really helped to motivate him to change his life. And Pat, though, started in British Columbia in BC Penn. He was doing time for a mail fraud, and met Tom Gordon, essentially initially came thinking, well, this will help him get an early parole, but realized after the fact that it really helped him change his life. And so he came to Alberta, where his home was, started the organization in Calgary as a volunteer group, a self-help group. And I should talk a little bit about the group, if I can.
Please.
Just to explain how this works. And the group is essentially a group of members, and this, I'll go back to when SANS started it, that they would bring together serious offenders, ex-offenders who are wanting to change their lives, and with the help of non-offenders, and that's a really important part of Seventh Step. This isn't just about offenders and ex-offenders, because in order to grow, you need to be around people who are more mature than you are in order to have a mentor or someone that can show you the way. And so non-offenders were involved, are involved. And so Pat, along with some local friends and his wife, Bee, who is a major part of the organization, started a volunteer group in Calgary in 1971. They actually started it in the Drumheller Penitentiary, where Pat had been transferred and was working on getting a day parole into the country. So the group started, and the idea is the group meets as a group to talk about issues and really look at the steps and then start to look at themselves. And the approach that is used within the group is a very frank discussion that can lead to something that's called a hot seat. And this is a confrontational type of discussion where a person will talk about themselves and then the group will challenge them on some of their, either their beliefs or their perceptions of what reality is. And as I mentioned before, a lot of us, you know, have different perceptions of reality, and sometimes they can be damaging to us. So the group uses this process to talk to a person and essentially does it with respect, though. I mean, it may get very confrontational, and, you know, if for some reason somebody says something that someone in the group recognizes as either a lie or just a total misconception, they'll challenge them on it. And this is what makes Seventh Step different, for example, say from AA, which has a similar philosophy about substance abuse or alcohol abuse, but most times it's people tell their story and the group supports them in their change, but doesn't necessarily confront them in a very strong way, where Seventh Step does. And for the members of Seventh Step who are offenders and repeat offenders, it's the only way in a lot of cases that you would be able to get at the truth, because the person has become so manipulative that, you know, there are about five layers before you actually find the truth. And so as a result, sometimes these hot seats can get very hot, but there are some ground rules, and that is that there can be no personal attacks, no physical attacks, obviously. And it has to be done with respect, about challenging the person's beliefs, not challenging them in terms of who they are or what they are. The fact is that we all have value as human beings, and the idea is to try to show some alternatives, and at the end of the discussion, and it usually takes the form of maybe lasting 10 or 15 minutes, or I've seen some last an hour. And at the end, though, the group points out the positive aspects of the person, the fact they still have worth and they have something to offer, and helps them to recognize that. And that's really, in a lot of cases for someone who is sort of at the bottom of their life cycle, so to speak, they don't recognize what their value is anymore. They've been told they're worthless, they're good, they're bad. And so the idea is the group will build them up to the point where they at least have some sense of self-worth, and then they can proceed to try and change their lives. In my own case, personally, I was a young offender, at the ages of 16 and 17, I'd been a straight-A student, came previously from a somewhat dysfunctional family, more or less lived through my imagination, did very well in school, but had no real practical sense of reality, and got into some trouble with probably not so much hanging around with the bad people. I was the kind of kid that most people didn't want their kid to hang around with, but I sort of sensed that I wanted to be, whether it was notorious or whatever, I wasn't getting enough recognition by being successful, because I was very successful as a straight-A student and involved in sports, etc. And so eventually was convicted of a couple of property offenses. And was fortunate that I still had a lot of support from family and friends. unfortunately for a lot of other people, they lose that support or they discard it themselves. In my case, I was able to retain that and retain a sense of self-worth, and fortunately went back, finished school, went to college, and while I was in Mount Royal, which is now Mount Royal University in Calgary, my first year back then, it was applied social sciences with a corrections major, or criminal justice major. Our first year we had a choice of a first year practicum, and so one of the options was to get involved as a practicum student with the Seven Step Society. Well, the first thing I found out was that, in fact, there were people who were in the group at the time in Drumheller Institution that I knew from my previous life. And so that was kind of an interesting discovery. The second thing was when I was given the book My Shadow Ran Fast, I recognized the book because I had read it when I was about 15 years old, and I thought that it was a fictional story. I didn't realize that it was a real story. So this whole thing became very real to me, and I saw it as something that I really wanted to dedicate myself to, because I saw that there was value in it, there was value for me to learn and grow, and there was value in order to being able to give something back. And so essentially, that was my first introduction, and my first meeting was at Patton B. Graham's house in their living room, because they didn't have any, there was no organization, there was no agency, but they were holding the meetings there and meeting in Drumheller, driving to the institution, which is an hour away from Calgary, hour and 15 minutes, on their own expense, and working with people in the institution. And Pat was a student at Mount Royal as well. So we eventually, as we graduated, and Pat was a year ahead of me, we, in 1975, applied for a LIP grant, which was a local initiative project funded through, I guess it was called Manpower Canada at the time, and we were able to start an agency. And so we actually started with two of our members who had been released from Drumheller, Pat and me, there were, and one other person who was a non-offender. So there were four ex-offenders and one non-offender that were essentially on the payroll. And in the fall of that year, we were offered a contract by the provincial government of Alberta to open a halfway house. So that was the start of the Alberta Halfway House for Seven Step. And we actually started in a six-bedroom, it's called a cluster, in the YWCA of all places. And the lady who was the director of the Y at the time, we were looking for space, and somebody put us in touch with her, and we thought this was almost a joke. How do you open a halfway house for released offenders, and these were primarily men, in a female facility? And so the gal's name was Stevie Mundell, a great person, and she said, well, I'm really not so worried about your guys. I'd be more worried about the gals that are in here and activity they might be creating with your people. So anyways, it turned out it was a very successful start for us, and we eventually got our own facility, built our own halfway house in 1977 with funding through CMHC, and the contract continued on today, where they have this is a 35-bed facility. And is very well recognized across Canada, and as is the Alberta Seven Step Society. I left the Seven Step Society as a paid staff person in 1982, and had been obviously involved in helping to develop both the provincial and the national organization, which we incorporated sort of well after the fact of incorporating in Alberta. But continued as a volunteer, as many of our people do. And Pat Graham, for example, who started Seven Step in Alberta, is now 84 years old. Pat still volunteers, and his wife Bea unfortunately passed away a few years ago. But Pat's health is a bit frail, but he gets out when he can to meetings. And one of our big highlights every year is that as Pat and Bea were retiring a number of years back, because they were paid staff of the society, until they retired, and we started a bursary at Mount Royal University in their name for criminal justice students, and so raised a funding to fund the bursary, and every year in November, Pat and I go to the bursary awards night to hand out the award, And I know for Pat, this is a big, an important part of his life still is being able to give something back, and both to students and to society in general. So that's really, I guess, in a long drawn out description, how Seventh Step came to be, in at least to start in Canada, and in my own personal involvement. And so if you have any further questions, I'll let you step in now, and then we can carry on.
A powerful story, your story, and how the organization works. And one thing that struck me, I'm on your website, and I love the truth about, number one, facing the truth about ourselves and the world around us. We decided we needed to change. So the truth, as you said, could be positive. And what came to mind is I ran a story on a company in a digital business publication. They're from Texas, and they teach business courses to students in prison because they said the truth about some of those guys is they're good salespeople, they're good business people, they had to manage people, they had to recruit people. And so some of these people have innate skills that they're using in a wrong way. And so you can point out a lot of positive things. And you can point out, I also think, because of my situation and other radio shows, like I've interviewed guys born with no arms and no legs. And they make more money than I ever will. They're doing more things than I ever will. One of them climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. And so I wrote down the word excuses here. And I'm sure if you're, as you said, at the ebb, low ebb of your life in prison, that you probably don't have a lot of positive thoughts about yourself. And you're probably happy to make excuses about somebody or something that caused you to be like this. And so a hot seat, although unpleasant, is, if it's truthful, it's truthful. And people have to, I guess, at some point recognize that, hey, all these things I'm saying, they're excuses. They're excuses. People with far less than me are doing far better than me. And so stop the excuses. And then also, as you said, look at the positive. Hey, I have selling skills. I was a drug dealer, whatever. I had to recruit people. You know, I know how to sell. I know how to speak with people. People have strengths that they don't realize if they're using them in the wrong way. So I love that. I love that. Step one, let me just read the seventh step pledge because I like that as well. It says that knowing that my freedom depends upon my thoughts and actions, I hereby pledge to face and accept the truth about myself to maintain my freedom, to become a useful member of society, to help others as I am now being helped. Wow. So I love how it starts with, depends upon my thoughts. Napoleon Hill said, the only thing you control, God gave us 100% control, is our thoughts. And we have 30 to 60,000 thoughts a day. And so if we don't control them, and you're a prisoner and a convict, you probably have a lot of those negative thoughts. And so, you know, my freedom depends on changing those thoughts and the actions. And then as the rest goes, truth about myself, maintain freedom, useful member of society. Because once you learn, and you probably don't learn this as a prisoner or a convict, once you learn that the more you help others, the universe and or God somehow manages to help you, then it's like, wow, it becomes not only a joy to help others, but you know in the back of your head that somehow God rewards this, and you all of a sudden have better things happen. And so useful member of society, and the way to do that, help others, help others. There's always a way you can help others. Who did I interview? I interviewed Frank O'Day, the founder of the Second Cup, the other day. He was arrested numerous times. He was homeless at one time. And he said he heard an ad for AA, and this was a long time ago, and they said, call this number. So he said he needed a dime to call. And eventually some guy came by and gave him a dime. And he said, you never know what a little bit can do, a dime. Started that call to AA that changed his life. He's now the founder of Second Cup, a number of other businesses. Second Cup has over 350 stores. And so help others. And you can always become a useful member of society, and you can always help others. If you have a dime in your pocket, you don't know what that dime means to somebody that could need it. And so powerful first step, powerful pledge. I love that. And so how are you accepted in prisons in Canada? Do they like, yeah, come on in because we don't want to see these guys again? Is it hard for you to get acceptance in the prisons? And what is your vision for Seventh Step in Canada?
Well, to answer your first question, it depends on the institution. It depends on the institution institutional warden, their philosophy about how they manage their institution. If they're in favor of reintegration, rehabilitation, and essentially helping people to help themselves, then we find it's much easier to get into the institution. If the institutional administration, and I won't say just the warden, although they are the final authority, but if their idea is strictly about incarceration and following the rules to the letter, then it may not be as easy to have a group start in the institution. But normally what we've found, and we've had actually new institutional groups start in the last few years. One in particular I'll use as an example is in Matsqui Institution, which is a medium security institution in the Fraser Valley at Abbotsford, British Columbia. And both the warden and the social programs manager in the institution attended a public forum that we held in Abbotsford. And they were very, very supportive and, in fact, said, when can you start? And so we went in. Our first step was we met with the inmate committee, which is the representatives of the inmates in the institution. Most prisons, and I'll use federal prisons primarily, provincial jails may have it as well, but they have an inmate committee which basically is kind of like the union committee, I guess you could say, representing the inmates and their views and concerns to the administration. And so we met with the inmate committee along with members of both the correctional officers, security group, and program people, talked about what Seventh Step is. And we had been in Matsqui years before, but the group had closed and hadn't been active there for a number of years, mainly due to a lack of volunteer support in the Lower Mainland. And I'll talk about that, excuse me, later as far as volunteerism in corrections in Canada. But anyway, both the inmates and the administration were very supportive, so we had enough of volunteer support, and we actually did get, and we do work with the public safety, which is the ministry that funds all prisons, etc., in Canada, Correctional Service of Canada, Parole Board, everybody falls under public safety.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought the correctional office, whatever service was their own organization.
No, they're just one department of public safety, and they're not always in sync with other divisions, but anyway, that's
right.
Where their money comes from. But public safety themselves, which is the sort of the parent umbrella body, does have grants for citizen engagement, and that's being challenged a bit now under current economic conditions. But as far as the structure of it, we were able to get a small amount of funding to help set up a volunteer training program, pay for one of our volunteer coordinators, who also actually happens to be the executive secretary for the organization, and she lives in Ladysmith, which is on Vancouver Island. She was actually formerly the executive director of Alberta of the organization, but mostly just volunteers her time. And as it turns out, in terms of any funding that we have, she gets a small stipend to look after the bookkeeping and website, et cetera, for Seventh Step, but she's paid nothing in wages. And anyway, so I would travel out from Calgary on my time. I'm a volunteer as well. I should mention that just to back up a little bit, I've worked in the oil and gas industry since 1982 when I left Seventh Step, and was very fortunate to have some good business involvement and development and opportunities along the way, and eventually got to the point where I could spend a lot of time, my own time, and be a volunteer and be able to spend time doing helping out with Seventh Step. So anyway, between us, we were able to start this group in Matsqui, and with the support of the administration and our volunteer from the island, and also some local folks who we were able to contact that got involved, and with a little bit of seed money, were able to get the volunteer group going, run regular group meetings in the institution, recruited a number of people, and essentially, you know, we run a seven-step group there with the support of the institution. Alberta, in two penitentiaries here, we do the same. On the East Coast, in Newfoundland, there's actually a group in a youth institution, Prince Edward Island in the provincial institution, and we have an organization in Nova Scotia that is just starting in a federal penitentiary, Spring Hill Institution. They're just working on getting started there. But yes, once the administration recognizes, and if you have good communication, we found that there are always issues with security. You have to be aware of that, and we are very clear that we are not a advocacy organization. We advocate for our members, but we are not about affecting public social change. That's really the realm of the John Howard Society, the Elizabeth Fry Society, although we support their efforts and we will advocate for our members, but we're not about trying to change the rules of the institution, because that's the last thing that members in an institution need is somebody coming in and saying, you're right, they're all wrong, and we're going to help you change it, because that's why they got there in the first place, because they didn't recognize there are rules in society and rules in an institution. So we're very transparent that way, and that makes our objectives easier to attain. And the other thing is, and I should mention that Seventh Step, although we are very accepting of most offenses and offenders, we do have a limitation in that in our core group, in our actual hot seat groups where you have to become a member, you have to be voted in as a member, and it has to be a unanimous vote by the membership of that group after you've been sponsored by a member, that we actually exclude sex offenders. And the reason that we exclude sex offenders is not so much because we are judging them. We also exclude known informants as well. But there has to be trust in the group. And unfortunately, and this is a reality, and this is about us accepting reality as well, because, you know, as much as we think we might want to help everybody within the institutions, and of course in society, as you hear regularly, sex offenders, unfortunately, I mean, their crimes are heinous in most cases, and obviously not acceptable to society, morally or otherwise. But in the sense that in an institution, if you had a group where you did allow sex offenders, chances are those would be the only people in the group. And the large percentage of inmates in an institution and recidivists are not sex offenders. So our target group are recidivists and in some cases first-time offenders as well. And then for known informants, if the group doesn't feel that they can trust the people in the group to share their inner thoughts, and in some cases, I mean, there may be someone in an institution who has a drug problem and is still abusing drugs within the institution, but for them to be able to talk about that and then to be able to make a commitment that they're going to change and quit abusing drugs, they have to trust the group that they're talking to. So we make this very clear to the institutional administration as well, that we will not allow those particular people in the group, that the group members have to be sponsored by the membership of the group, so it's strictly a volunteer process. The person has to want to be a member. The other thing is we limit the size of the groups in the institution to a maximum of 15 members. Now, this helps the institution feel more comfortable that we don't have a large, unmanageable group. It also makes membership of the group more exclusive. So people sometimes have to wait to become a member. And in the past, I'll use Drumheller as an example because it was probably one of our most successful in Drumheller Penitentiary, one of our most successful groups over the years. We would have up to 10 people on the waiting list, and they would wait 3 to 6 months to become to get to their first meeting. So once they're sponsored, a member brings their name up at a meeting, and then they're allowed to attend, and then they have to attend 4 consecutive meetings before they can be voted in as a member. So, and then it has to be a unanimous vote. And the vote has to be fair, though, in the sense that somebody, you know, can't use the example that they don't like the way the, you know, the person, their looks, their whatever. It has to be a reasonable thing that the person, A, is not sincere because they're still, you know, abusing drugs or doing illegal activities, or they're a known informant, or they're a sex offender. And so in any event, that's, you know, that really, in a, you know, it probably stacks the deck a little bit in our favor in the sense of who we're dealing with. But, I mean, we take a lot of hardcore people that have had no track record of success, and the institutions appreciate this once they understand our whole process. So a lot of it is about communication in order to gain that acceptance. And when we do, we have a lot of support from people across the country that are in, you know, in positions of authority or influence.
I love it, and my wife will love it, because the one cases she won't take is sex offenders, especially with children, and she said that they're a different type of people. And so
and a lot of
she's dealt with murderers and whatever, and she said in a lot of cases, you know, these kind of people, once they get to you, they're somewhat good people, or at least they're honest and this and that. And so, as you said, you need to have that faith and confidence in the group and sharing. And if you had a group that allowed them, then you'd have most of them. And then, so some good exclusions there. I love that. We won't focus too much on it, but my wife will be proud of you. So what if, because, you know, I've been begging you, like, I want to help. So how can people help? Money, of course, people. And again, when I was talking earlier about you never know how much a dime can help. Now, hard to send a dime by Interact or by online, but you know, people can send 10, 20, whatever they want. So giving money, that's an easy thing. What about how can they help time-wise? They say, hey, man, I'm my husband, or myself, I was in prison, and I want to help, or anybody want to help. How are some ways that they can help you?
Well, exactly. Time is a very important thing, and I alluded to that briefly when I talked about volunteerism just earlier in terms of groups folding in different parts of the country. You know, just the seven-step movement itself was so strong in the mid-early 70s to probably to the late 80s, but then there were a lot of us that were involved. Fortunately, I was young when I first got involved. A lot of other people weren't. And as you may know, you know, the mid-70s was a time of real change in Canada, particularly in the criminal justice system. Prior to that, a lot of the programs were strictly run by the government or a few volunteer organizations, and institutions were very closed and restricted. Suddenly, they didn't throw the doors open, but they threw the doors open to the community to be involved, and so volunteers got involved. But a lot of us got old, and so energy ran out, and then pretty soon what happened is the support funding, which came from, in a lot of cases it came from the government, and, you know, we've had this argument with the government, and they say, well, you have to go to the community to get your funding if you want to support your groups. Well, when you think about it, where does the tax money that supports the government come from? It comes from the community. I mean, the community paid the taxes to support the government, so essentially it's our money. We don't feel guilty taking it back when we're offered a grant or whatever. But to a large extent, though, that has changed. And I will say, and if I can use this as just a small platform for volunteerism and volunteer groups across the country, especially in criminal justice, and especially with this current mandate of the current government about public safety and safer streets and communities, really what has happened is it's become more about enforcing the law, incarcerating people, and not so much about treating people and putting them back into society in a really effective way. So what's happened is the funding has been restricted. For example, the Correctional Service of Canada, which has a citizens engagement function or department, their funding has been severely cut back in the last year, and that's really affected what happens as far as supporting volunteers. So two things. You're asking how people, well, maybe more than two things, but in particular how people can get involved is actually, yes, volunteering their time, contacting through our website, the Seven Step Society of Canada, the local areas where there are contact points available, but really part of it is to be able to come out, and I should just talk about the process of Seven Step a little bit more, and that is when people get involved in the institution, ideally we would like to have a street group that meets on a weekly basis where volunteers, non-offenders, ex-offenders would come and they would carry out the same group process as they would in the institution. And so they would attend meetings weekly. And what that does is it creates a conduit for people from the institution to come out of the institution. They've already met these folks who have been able to come in as volunteers. And anyone going into a federal institution would have to take, there's a national volunteer training program. It's just one afternoon. It's 4 hours. Every federal volunteer in a federal institution has to take that course. And if a member of Seven Step, they've gone through the process of becoming a member, being accepted, sort of passing the acid test, so to speak, and then they can volunteer their time. And just being there to a large extent is what makes a difference. And so if they have enough people that can meet on a weekly basis in the community, obviously you need space. As I mentioned, when I got involved, Pat and B. Graham held the meetings in their house. And eventually Pat's brother-in-law, who owned a company, can't remember what they did exactly. It was some I think they sold adjustable beds or something, but they had a small boardroom, and we moved from there and used borrowed space till we eventually had our own facilities. But that's always the challenge, is to have the space, to have the volunteers who will go out to the institution. And in a lot of cases, they might even have to cover their own expenses, especially, well, if it's local, it's not that difficult. If you're traveling, say, an hour to get to an institution, well, there's, gas money, that sort of thing. So that's the second part. Yes, funding is always an issue. We have very little funding that we receive right now. We try to make the most of it. I do travel. The organization pays for my expense. I'm a volunteer national executive director, but Seven Step is a very active member of the National Association's Active in Criminal Justice. It's a volunteer group, but it's an umbrella organization made up of Salvation Army, John Howard, Elizabeth Fry, St. Leonard's, a lot of the organizations that people might be familiar with, and we meet on a regular basis. We do consultation with the public safety. In fact, we have a public safety workshop in Ottawa next week. I'll be there for 3 days. And, so funding is very limited, and we sometimes have to use our own resources to do that. And but we participate, as Seven Step does, as a very active member. Personally, I sit as the treasurer on the executive committee of this organization. And, we have a very meaningful interaction with the national corrections bodies. We're also hosting a reception on Parliament Hill next week. It's co-hosted by... I'll have to say this word. We're trying to maybe find some new clients, the Senate and Seven Step, but on Parliament Hill, and we actually have a guest list already of people attending, MPs, senators from all parties. This is more of a public information interaction between us, but that's part of what Seven Step does. So really, to be involved, it's a combination of contacting local people, whether it be in Halifax, in St. John's, in Vancouver, in Calgary. One place, interesting enough, we really have to gear up, and we've seen a challenge, I guess, is in Ontario, Southern Ontario. We've had, Kingston, of course, as you know, is the hotbed of institutions, of federal institutions, and we've been trying to get a group started there for several years. We have a very interested individual who's involved with CSC, has been trying to help, but there's such a challenge for volunteers because there's so many organizations needing help that it's difficult to get enough people involved. And so if we have some ex-offenders, for example, who have become relatively successful and want to give something back, that's a spot where we really do need some help, and in the Toronto area as well. Our national president lives in Midland, so he's not too far from Toronto, and he's been working on trying to garner some local support as well. So I would say, depending on where your listening audience is, I mean, obviously it could be worldwide, I guess, if it's web-based,
mm-hmm.
but particularly in that region right now, we could certainly use some support. So hopefully that addresses that question.
Nice. Yeah, exactly. And I volunteer a lot, and I look around a lot, and I see a lot of people that don't volunteer a lot. And so, people, come on. Especially if you're in a situation where you owe a debt to society for someone else who helped you out, get out there and volunteer. And this is an amazing organization where you could have a generational, lifelong impact on someone through this Seven Steps Society. So volunteer, but also money, any kind of money. So people are like, well, I can't give $1,000. Well, can you give 10? Can you give 10 a month? Can you give 20? Can you give 10 today and one time only? Whatever you can do, often God will move my heart to give. So I hope everybody has one of those inside them where when they feel the need that they should give. And so time and money, consider it. The website will be posted online when I promote this show, so people will be able to find you. And what an amazing organization. Thanks so much for your time, George. I appreciate it. You are really giving back to society, and it sounds like you have found, like I have, that when you help serve others, that, wow, life is a lot of fun when you really help improve the world and make someone else's life better, right?
Oh, for sure. No, and thank you for having me on, and I agree, the ability to be able to offer something back is a tremendous reward, and just as a matter of interest, I'm 60 years old, I'm essentially retired, I still do a little bit of part-time work with a engineering firm I was connected with, but I've got lots of time to contribute, and I'm sure there's a lot of people like me out there who have that time and are thinking about, what can I do to make myself useful. Well, there's certainly organizations like ours or others where there's an opportunity to do that.
Exactly. Instead of having to sit at home wondering why you wished you had retired all these years, you can actually get out and use your time where you're going to make an impact on someone else's life in a positive way. And I hope that that's an ambition of a lot of people in life at any time of their life. So thank you so much, George. I appreciate the amazing, great work your society is doing. And I'm going to be hounding on you soon to get me into action and get the word out for you guys. So keep up the great work. Also, everybody, if you have a chance, read that book, My Shadow Ran Fast, because George wasn't able to go over all of Bill Sands' life, but he was the opening act for Bob Hope. He worked with Milton Berle. He played in the Bob Hope Classic. He earned a place on the U.S. Olympic swimming team. He won a state oratorial, which is a speaking contest. He owned and raced cars. He owned and flew airplanes. And he owned a few very successful businesses and worked for companies around the world where he earned great money and enjoyed great successes. So once you read the book, you'll be like, wow, how could one guy do all that when he started from prison? And so fascinating book, My Shadow Ran Fast. Thanks, George. Have an amazing day, and keep up the great work.
Thanks, Tom. You too. Take care.
Take care.